And you will have recalled now things that you didn't mention in the first interview, and that you can tell me now.
Yeah, some of the things that I forgot to mention, because I simply forgot them, were that as Israel loomed larger on the scene, the established institutions somehow seemed threatened, particularly with reference to their financing. During this period, many organizations had to be set up, usually ad hoc, in order to meet the challenges to the Israeli causes whenever they arose and wherever they arose. Mostly they arose with reference to the organized Jewish community, particularly the Council for Jewish Federation of Welfare Funds. There was at one time a genuine threat to the entire UJA structure in the early 1950s. And in order to meet that threat, a committee of community leaders to safeguard the UJA was set up, made up of leading Jewish citizens all over the country, of which I was appointed the national chairman. Among the, you ready? Among the major Israeli institutions, the institution called Israel Bonds was set up in 1950, and in April of 1952, I was chosen the national chairman for Israel Bond Sales. And a year or two later, I was chosen the national chairman for the Guardians for Israel. As the years have gone by, the whole idea of Israel Bonds has been completely accepted by not only the American Jewish community, but by the American community, so that in the current year, the goal for Israel Bonds for the year 1974 is $1 billion. It is my opinion that this is not outside the capability of sales in 1974. I'd like to go back a little bit and talk about political activities. Although active as an interested participant during my entire adult life in political affairs and political trends, the only time I took an active positioned interest was in the Kennedy campaign of 1960, for which I was assistant treasurer for the state of Pennsylvania. Assistant Treasurer for the State of Pennsylvania for the citizens for Kennedy and Johnson, reporting to Byron White, who is now Justice White, who at that time was the national chairman of Citizens for Kennedy and Johnson. I was always interested in innovation, even though sometimes it's only social. I was a charter member of the Pittsburgh Harvard Yale Princeton Club. I was a charter member of the Standard Club. And at one time I belonged to I belonged to the Concordia Club, Yale Club of New York. was a founding member of the Pittsburgh Chamber Music Society. I was an original member of its board of trustees. I was an original subscriber. I have ever since been a subscriber for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. This lasting over a period of over 40 years. Having been very much interested in the field of art, as an amateur painter, but more actively as a collector. As I think I said before, items from our collection have been shown at least 25 museums in the United States. And we have given gifts to Exeter Academy, the Metropolitan Museum, Harvard University, University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Museum, and many paintings in Israel, the various museums in Israel. Most of my interests outside of Israel derive from my years as an undergraduate and graduate at Yale. During my undergraduate years, my good fortune to become quite friendly with classmates Henry Luce, Morton Wilder, and others with whom I maintained a lifelong friendship, whom I tried to influence, and who certainly influenced me.
Because you didn't want to get back to Pittsburgh.
A net activity on behalf of Israel. Two or three years ago, a book was published entitled The Pledge, which attempted to recreate the activities between the years 1945 and 1948. For the preparation of a war which is anticipated in case the occasion arose for the state to be declared and defended. An important meeting in June of 1945 held at the apartment of Earl Sonneborn. Henry Montour had assembled some 20 or 24 active and energetic Jewish citizens interested in Israel to discuss with Mr. Ben-Gurion, who had come over for the purpose, bringing with him Eliezer Kaplan, at that time was a treasurer of the Jewish Agency, to discuss with them the possibility of not only raising the funds, but raising the wherewithal by way of armor plates, ammunition, planes, ships, and other methods and means necessary for the organization and protection of the state when as it came into being. This operation was directed nationally by Rudolf Sonneborn, but was handled on a regional basis by citizens in their particular regions, and Charles Roslin and I were in charge of the operations in and around Pittsburgh. Some of the most needed material was armor plate, electronic equipment, particularly walkie-talkies, motors, small manufacturing machines, and various other steel products. At the time, the man sent here by Mr. Ben-Gurion to advise us on exactly the amounts of items needed and the kinds of items needed was Nostrovsky. Little did we know at the time that Nostrovsky was the commander-in-chief of the Israeli underground. He visited Pittsburgh several times, and during those visits we discussed in more detail, in greater detail, the exact prescriptions that were necessary, exact requirements that were necessary. It wasn't until the actual declaration of the state that I saw on television Mr. Ben-Gurion marching in the parade in Tel Aviv, and alongside of him was Mr. Dostrovsky, who was the commander-in-chief. Later on, he became the president of Technion, and his name changed his name. His name was Yaakov Dori. In the book, The Pledge, the author, having received his information from rather unauthorized and unqualified sources, used or claims some names as being present who really were not present, and omitted my name. However, had he been a more careful researcher, he would have seen an article in the Jewish Frontier a year or two before that, in which Mr. Ben-Gurion, writing an article of reminiscence, mentions some of the people who were present at that meeting. Unfortunately, in that particular article, he refers to me as Alex Leventhal of Pittsburgh, and to his dying day, he could never get it right as Leventhal, although I have a wonderful exchange of correspondence with him on this particular subject. I visited Israel many, many times after the state was declared, and always came back with more to do, with more ideas on how to do more things for the strengthening of the state. And I've been active in its very various American institutions from the very beginning. About 9 years ago, when the Israel Museum in Jerusalem was opened, Mrs. Longfellow and I were there for the opening. As a matter of fact, we were there before the opening and were with Billy Rose when he actually set the sculptures in place in the sculpture garden. And we were there when the first exhibition was mounted. We took part in the ceremonies and celebrations when the whole world of Jewish art, by way of collectors, painters, gathered to rejoice. We returned to Israel for the 5th anniversary celebration of the Israel Museum. We're going again now for the 9th anniversary of the Israel Museum. And we hope to go again next year for the 10th anniversary of the Israel Museum. Since then, a new museum has been built in Tel Aviv, which we contribute a painting for the opening, although we contribute many more to the old Tel Aviv Museum. We've also contributed to the museum at Hazaria and hope in the future to present the various Israel museums with more items from our collection.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch in Pittsburgh, you were more than instrumental here, too.
In Pittsburgh, I was, as a member of the board of the United Jewish Federation, I was very active and very vocal in seeing to it that the various Israeli causes received their fair share. This was a continuing struggle until the 1967 war. Fortunately, since then, the whole way of Jewish opinion in Pittsburgh as well as in the United States has shifted dramatically in favor of Israel. So no such problems, whether they are of UJA or of Israel bonds, exist any longer. Israel's institutions, whether they are for welfare or for economic development or for education or for universities or for art or for any other causes, are well established now. The Weizmann Institute, the Technion, the Tel Aviv University, University of State Boker, the University of Beersheba, all receive ample support now and will receive even greater support as the greater needs arise.
And I'm trying to direct your thoughts to some of the contributions you made in Pittsburgh, for Pittsburgh, just by virtue of your opinions and the influence you exerted over other influential people.
In Pittsburgh, I tried as best I could throughout all the years to make myself heard and to be persuasive on all the causes in which I was deeply interested. And I met privately in groups and in large assemblies, trying at all times to explain, describe, and project not only the needs of Israel, but the needs and the benefits of all the causes in which I was interested, whether they were political, educational, social, moral, or national.
Weren't you one of the organizers of the ADA here, right?
I was I was one of the organizers, and was at the first national organizing meeting of ADA in Washington, called by Eleanor Roosevelt. And then we came, and then upon her return with Florence Reisenstein, we were organizers of the first ADA chapter in Pittsburgh, and for many years took a very active part in it. I think I've already discussed my interest in ADA on a national basis. My interest in ADA continues.
And Pittsburgh, when is it?
Here we are. In the 1930s, Great Depression, when the first food distribution plans were set up, and Bryn Hovday, then a professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh, became the chairman. I was one of his assistants in order to set up welfare during the Depression. During the Depression years, we were very active in seeing to it that food distribution centers were set up in the churches, that there was city, state, and federal money for this cause, and at the same time, the need for public housing arose, and Bryn Hovday at that time became the Pittsburgh head of the Housing Authority. I helped him plan Terrace Village 1 and 2. I was present with Bryn Hovday when Franklin Roosevelt came in 1934-35 to dedicate the Terrace Village as the first large housing project in the United States. I've always been interested in public housing. I've always been interested in government insurance. I've always tried to advocate better welfare programs, more social security, better means of dealing with the aged, and all problems dealing with health, welfare, and education. From time to time, I've lectured at the University of Pittsburgh, at Carnegie Mellon University, at Beale College, Allegheny College, various other places.
Were these ongoing series or
no,
single
these,
lectures?
These were all single lectures. Some dealt with welfare, some dealt with Israel, some dealt with art. I was always interested in economic problems inside the United States, particularly the problems that particularly the issues that were more conducive to greater productivity at lesser prices, with fair distribution of products, with lessening the gap between the rich and the poor, with eliminating discrimination, of helping various ethnic groups, whether it was the coal fields during the old company housing, during the old days of company-owned housing in the coal mining towns. In the early 20s, I went to various coal mining towns and around Pittsburgh, trying to do away with company police, getting workers, union organizers, and working on early union men out of jail. I was always interested in starting in the early 30s, in all the new Roosevelt programs, the Agricultural Act, the NRA, the public housing, the SEC, and all the various New Deal ideas, the new banking acts, and all the other ideas that arose as a result of the Depression. At one time, I even thought of going to Washington and devoting my life that, to these causes. But then I was married, I had my young children, and I found it best to stay here in Pittsburgh.
But you really did devote your life to these causes.
I devoted my whole life, and I still do. Wherever I see anybody or any group or wherever I find any of these causes attacked or not understood, I attempt to do whatever I can to further them. This I find the most satisfying and the most important element in my life.
When Lawrence was mayor of Pittsburgh and set about creating the big renaissance, were you involved
in
that?
Yes, you bet I was. When Dave Lawrence was mayor, and I read before he was mayor, I always knew the local politicians, and I was interested in the early days of smoke control. I was interested in that along with the public housing. I was very much interested in seeing to it that David Lawrence knew the Jewish situation and helped write many of his speeches. Later he became one of the most important advocates of the cause of Jews as well as of Israel. And needed no further instruction. I think David Lawrence made some of the finest speeches and was one of the greatest influences in the tri-state Pennsylvania area. As great an influence as any other non-Jew, and much more important than many, many Jews in attracting people to the cause and money to the cause and giving Jews themselves a finer sense, a stronger sense in their own identity. Dave Lawrence was a very unusual type of old-line politician who recognized the connection between supporting progressive causes and the necessity for correlating them with the economic interests of the big companies, and particularly in this area, with the melon interests. I think he was somewhat of a genius in bringing about advanced legislation and advanced situations because he knew when to give, how far to go, and how to persuade people toward his particular ends. He always felt, as an Irishman who had been interested in the founding of the Irish Republic, that if the Irish had had the same closeness and the same strong motivation as the Jews, that the Irish problem would have been much better resolved than it finally was. And he invariably mentioned this in his speeches about Israel. I was opposed, one matter in which Dave Lawrence was very much interested, and that was vis-a-vis the Renaissance of Pittsburgh, and that was with reference to the condemnation of private property for private use. The condemnation of private property for public use, such as schools, parks, hospitals, and so on, has always been recognized in American law, but never the condemnation of private property or private use, which is what the Pittsburgh Authority became when the Point area was condemned were then turned over to the Equitable Life Assurance Company, a private enterprise. However, in retrospect, now that some 25 or 30 years have elapsed, perhaps he saw this more clearly than I did. I like to think that there are other things that in retrospect I see more clearly now than I did at the time, although at the time they were certainly my best judgment as well as the best judgment of all those with whom I was engaged. I'm thinking of the Terrace Village 1 and 2. At that time, it was contemplated that they should have one large operation housing 2,000 or 3,000 family units with and integrating them on a sort of a large basis. It never occurred to us at the time that, though properly motivated, it would later be impossible to get people themselves to integrate, and in a very short period of time, Terrace Village became a black ghetto, and it so remains. Better thinking today is that there should be smaller units, so that if they do become entirely black or entirely white, at least they're on a very small basis, and they are located in areas that are either white or black, so the integration becomes potentially structurally more viable. In fighting some of the Jewish causes, I think that some mistakes were made in retrospect, although they served their purpose for so many years that the fact that the situation and the ambiance have changed the situation. In this respect, I'm speaking of the YMHA on Belfield Avenue, which at the time of its conception certainly was to serve a large Jewish purpose from all over the city. It served it very well for maybe 25 or 30 years, but I doubt very much whether it can much longer serve its purpose on Belfield Avenue, whether when one large center is the ideal rather than a group of small centers spread wherever the Jewish communities are. I feel the same way about the Jewish hospital. I have grave doubts whether or not a Jewish-supported hospital is still necessary. It was necessary at the time because there was discrimination against Jewish doctors. Jewish patients did not feel comfortable in non-Jewish hospitals. There was a question of kashrus. However, most of these problems have been resolved, and a hospital which calls itself Jewish and is predominantly Jewish-supported is less than 50% Jewish needed, Jewish used, and is predominantly now used by the general community, particularly the black community, which creates quite a drain on Jewish funds and certainly should receive much greater allocations from general public funds.
To talk about. But I wanted to say that in your home, I met, I think, some of the most interesting people in Pittsburgh. And in kind of just a loose, friendly, warm, gossipy kind of way, I wish we could talk about some of those people that you knew in Pittsburgh that were your friends. Well, of course, you know, these are people that also had an impact on the community and on the world. I'm thinking, of course, of Gladys Schmidt and Donald Steinperson and Rosenberg. And if you could tell me a little about some of these people, some of your nice, warm memories, perhaps, of Gladys, because I know you would read her books in manuscript before they were published. And I know how much she valued your friendship.
Well, I can say this, that always we tried to make our house a gathering place for people who were interested in certainly all the things we were interested in, as well as in many things we would like to find out about, such as many times in the field of medicine, we became very, very friendly with Dr. Jonas Salk. When he first was brought to Pittsburgh, when he first began to experiment before he arrived at his famous vaccine, he was working on a flu immunization project and almost accidentally came upon the polio vaccine, the polio project. During it all, we saw him bury him and his wife and his children very, very regularly, and knew of the progress as it first developed, and then went with him and talked with him and heard from him right through the great national experiment and the great pronouncement of the results of the national experiment, and then the battles that took place with the American Medical Association, with the various laboratories, with some of the conflicts between laboratories that wanted to exploit the vaccine, the entire Cutter episode, and then after that, his problem with Jonas Salk, the University of Pittsburgh, Chancellor Litchfield, how he finally arrived at the decision to move the laboratory to California, to La Jolla. We are privileged to talk with him about the building of the Salk Institute. We recommended the architect. We saw to it he met the great Louis Kahn as an architect, who then built the design and built the Salk Institute, which Louis Kahn always regarded as his Taj Mahal and his great showpiece. We have maintained this friendship with John Salk and his family throughout the years to this very day. Whenever he comes by here, he stops in here. We have a party. We meet his old friends, some of his new friends, some of our friends. And we go out to California. We visit them at La Jolla. All their children attend their son's wedding. And Dr. Salk and his family are very friendly with my children. And just as we have done with Dr. Salk, so we have carried on lifelong friendships with others, among them Gladys Schmidt and her husband Cy Goldfield. We knew Gladys practically from the time she was a student at Pitt, and followed her all through her triumphs, her first triumph, in book after book on the various subjects. One book dealing with the early days of Rome, she borrowed from us an antique, ancient Roman, make those little things.
A lycan?
No, a little oil lamp. Little oil lamp. And as a matter of fact, she put the oil in it and lighted it, and took it down the staircase just to see what kind of shadows she would get and flash and effect she would get.
You seem to be able to perceive exons early on, so that when you met Jonas and became friendly with him, it was before he was the Dr. Salk, and before she was the well-known novelist.
Right.
So that you perceive them early.
Yes, well, and we knew Dr. Mirsky when he was first brought to Pittsburgh. And we knew Dr. Mirsky, of course, before that from Cincinnati. He was a friend of my brother's and sister's in Cincinnati when he was director of the May Institute down in Cincinnati. When he came to Pittsburgh, we saw him all the time. His children and our children were friendly. And we carried until Dr. Mirsky left Pittsburgh about a year or two ago. We also got to know Dr. Spock, Benjamin Spock, when he was brought to Pittsburgh. And came to our house. We visited him, his family. And we have maintained this friendship throughout all the years. There were many other men at the medical school in the field of psychiatry and in the field of child guidance. Anne was on the board of the Child Guidance Center for many, many years. So we knew the directors and the psychiatrists who were both at the center and at the West Bend Psychiatric Institute. Same way in the field of English or economics or history. We knew the professors both at Carnegie Mellon and Tech, and Carnegie Mellon and Pitt, and some at Chatham. We were very friendly at Chatham with Charles LeClaire, who was the director of art at the Chatham, which then the, what was called Chatham was the
Pennsylvania College for Women.
And about 12, 15 years ago, while he was the director, there was an exhibition at Chatham of some 30 or 35 paintings from our collection. There have been exhibitions, many exhibitions of paintings from our collection. There were two of them separated by 10 years at Allegheny College. There was one at
speak of painting, and don't forget your friendship with Sam Rosenberg.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that.
No, I'm sorry.
There were, as I said before, items from our collection are practically on exhibition all the time, somewhere or other. They're borrowing things from us. Paintings from our collection have been reproduced in many books. From my first game to Pittsburgh, I became friendly with Sam Rosenberg, the artist, when he was teaching at the YMHA, at which time I was the director of the, I was the educational director on a volunteer basis, and he was a professor there, and a professor of art, and I got to know Sam, his wife Libby, very, very well, and maintained this friendship throughout all the years until the time of his death. He was a charming, dear, sincere, humane, human person, deep feelings about all the ills and hardships of mankind, and we discussed them many, many times, particularly during the Hitler period, but he was moved so deeply, and this was revealed and expressed in his in a whole series of his paintings, an earlier series of his paintings, which took place down on the hill, which is the area where the housing authority is now. And I knew the areas very well, and I saw those those early paintings of his, which, to my way of thinking, was his most important period, certainly as far as Pittsburgh is concerned. I've always known the director of the Carnegie Museum, always been friendly with him, always discussed possible acquisitions, and from time to time made some contribution to paintings which the museum wanted to buy.
I know how close you were.
Among the people who were my closest friends with the Rosenblums or the Risensteins, I organized with Billy Risenstein, the Falk Company, in 1923. And from that time on, Billy and his wife Florence were very intimate with us, and until Florence's untimely passing, sufficient as an interest. She was an activist of the first order. She did something about everything she was interested in. And this starts with public housing. It goes through civil rights. It goes through Americans for Democratic Action. It goes through politics on a very, very intimate and active basis, starting in the early 1980s, after World War II, in which she actually took a leading part as a fundraiser, as a influence, as a persuader, as an advocate. She was really the founder of NEED, Negro in Pittsburgh, Negro Educational Emergency